Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit and nonpartisan forum open to the public. To attend a Commonwealth Club event, check out our program listing at www.commonwealthclub.org.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of In Forum, a division of the Commonwealth Club by and for people in their 20s and 30s, with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. I'm Paul Flores, Program Director of Youth Speaks. Spoken word is the entertaining and often educational form of oral poetry that has percolated on the fringes of literary culture since the mid-80s. Since the 1999 release of the film Slam, featuring the poetic performances of Saul Williams, and with Russell Simmons' Deaf Poetry on HBO, spoken word has gained pop culture fame, along with some literary merit. Tonight, we are talking about Youth Speaks, the national leader in creative writing and spoken word programs for teenagers. Founded in San Francisco in 1996, Youth Speaks was the first organization to introduce poetry slams to teenagers. The popular competitive spoken word event has since spread all across the country, and now Youth Speaks and its affiliates through the Brave New Voices Network bring poetry and active literacy programs to over 250,000 youth nationwide. This year, Youth Speaks celebrates its 10th anniversary with its annual Teen Poetry Slam at the San Francisco Opera House. We have gathered tonight a panel in order to appreciate the accomplishment and impact of this dynamic organization. I would like to introduce you to our panelists. Melanie Clay is an 18-year-old artist from Oakland. She was co-champion of the Youth Speaks Teen Poetry Slam in 2004 and 2005. She was also a participant in the International Poetry Slam Brave New Voices. Melanie is a proud member of the Youth Speaks Youth Advisory Board Spokes, and she loves laughing. James Cass is the founder and executive director of Youth Speaks. Since 1996, James has facilitated creative writing workshops in high schools, universities, libraries, and juvenile detention centers. He is the creator of Brave New Voices, the Bringing the Noise reading series, Spoken City, and the Youth Speaks Teen Poetry Slam. Emiliano Bourgois Chacon is a 17-year-old poet from San Francisco. He was a finalist in the 2003 and 2004 Youth Speaks Teen Poetry Slams. In 2004, he was co-champion and went on to perform at Brave New Voices, the International Youth Poetry Slam. He works for Youth Speaks on their youth advisory board called Spokes. He also loves laughing. Elaine Katzenberger is the associate director of City Lights Booksellers and Publishers. She is also a senior editor and the publisher of many works of fiction, nonfiction, and poetry, and her books have received numerous awards, among them the American Book Award and the Penn West Award for Excellence in Publishing. Jaime Jacinto is a poet and the author of Heaven is Just Another Country, a collection of poetry nominated for the Bay Area Book Reviewers Association Award. He is also an educator, currently a faculty member of San Francisco State University's College of Education. Please give our panelists a warm welcome. We're going to kick tonight's program off with a poem from Jason Mateo of Youth Speaks. Let's give Jason Mateo a hand.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Jason Mateo. I got down with Youth Speaks in 1997, 96, with one of the first poetry slams out there at Intersection for the Arts. I was asked this evening to perform a piece that is about as old as the organization that I wrote back then. I know I look like I'm 16, but I'm really 25. But this piece was written when I was like 16, 17, so I'm going to share it with you today. To start this off. Is that cool? Cool. Excellent. Thank you. Why am I discriminated for my presence? They judge me for my color, my essence, not my brain or who was present. It's like they make it into a game. Smile when they stop me from my education. Why am I faced with these type of situations? See, where's this free nation that all races is migrated in, or are all souls being assassinated? See, some teachers, cops, and adults, they don't look at me like a human, but like an animal, an immigrant, or a stupid juvenile. I stay calm, though, although I feel the empower, knowing that it'll explode in the next hour, for they think I'm the coward, not knowing that it's the mentality I devour. See, my desire is to stop them, show I'm not stupid, weak, or a victim to their system. Knowledge is the key to destroy the foundation, for the freedom train is what I'm chasing, while others are faking, playing a role for their own reputation. See, if I wasn't judged by what they consider Jason, good vibes would be fulfilling this section, but I'm an outcast, different from the rest. But why disrespect this? Is it the way I dress, or just a life test? The system is a universal nemesis. I clasp my hands at times, look up and pray to be blessed. Nevertheless, my space can be trespassed. Because hip-hop is my culture, I'm looked at wrong and harassed. Even if I'm innocent, they want my ass. But a generation of youth is going fast, not taking the government's path, but making their own way, showing a creative display. With their jealousy, I swear they got nothing to say. Talking about others and who's got the biggest dick. They probably asked Jenny MacArthur to help them make a porno flick. See, these capitalist screwheads make me sick. If I could, I would ask the Congress to bend over for asses I would kick. But I told to keep my head up, for the society will flip. Soon everybody be walking down the block with peace in their lip lit. For peace everyone would be with, instead of this mob type gang. Shh. But trip. It's not my heart, but my head that's ripped. Still violence and gun control, they want us to stop it, but they blast whatever they fear in their iris, putting on disguises to despise us. Lower my self-esteem and confidence, appoint me the dunce. For people like me, they want, so they do whatever it takes, like daredevil stunts. Is it for fun? To me, no. It's like on my head, there is a gun.
For the radio audience, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club's In Forum program. And tonight, we're celebrating the 10-year legacy of Youth Speaks, the national leader in creative writing and spoken word programs for teenagers. I'm Paul Flores, program director of Youth Speaks, and I'm here with Melanie Clay, Teen Poetry Slam champion, James Cass, founder and executive director of Youth Speaks, Emiliano Bourgois-Chacon, Teen Poetry Slam champion, Elaine Katzenberger, associate director of City Lights Bookstore, Jaime Jacinto, poet and educator, and you just heard from Jason Mateo with a poem called Empower. Now, we're going to ask our panelists a few questions. For the sake of continuity, let's go back to 1996. Clinton was reelected. The economy was booming. Globalization was booming. The dot-com industry was taking off. The Unabomber got arrested. And in California, Proposition 209 was passed, which eliminated state and local government affirmative action programs. James, in relationship to what was happening in 1996, what were you doing then that inspired you to create Youth Speaks?
Hey, Paul. That's a great question to start off with, and it's one that's already tied my tongue. But essentially, the answer, I think, is more of what wasn't happening than what was happening. I was in the MFA program at San Francisco State with Paul Flores at the time and was becoming increasingly frustrated with the lack of diversity that I found as I got deeper and deeper into the writing world, both fiction and poetry. And at the same time, was feeling very discouraged at the lack of opportunity for progressive voices in the national dialogue. I remember distinctly when Clinton first won, how hard myself and my peers celebrated. And I remember by 1996 being totally discouraged by the last 4 years and what I thought the future was going to bring. And with the propositions and with different things, there was a lot going on around young people, particularly around young people of color, and there were very few opportunities for these people to speak publicly. What I found in graduate school was the opportunity for a lot of people to find pathways to public writing, public speaking, being part of the larger cultural dialogue, and not taking advantage of it. Really creating art that, to me, was becoming narrower and narrower in its definition of what poetry was, could be, and would be. And I thought as the aesthetic narrowed, it was increasingly leaving more and more people out. So actually, Paul was one of the first people I talked to, but the idea was essentially to go out and find the people who were writing, but who had no opportunity to meet each other, to develop their craft, and to share it publicly. And we figured the best way to do that was to start with teenagers right in our own neighborhoods in San Francisco. So that essentially was the impetus. It was a combination of a frustration of artistic development, political development, and opportunities for individual development and communication. And I really think that's still what the program is about, is those three things: artistic development, personal and community development, and political engagement.
Emiliano and Melanie, how were you recruited into Youth Speaks?
Well, Google... Google. I compare how I got into Youth Speaks kind of to, I mean, I was hungry, basically. It's almost like if you go out of town and you eat in a really good restaurant, and when you get back home, you need to find a restaurant that compares to the restaurant that you ate at when you were out of town. So the summer of my freshman year, I was in this program called InterSpark, also known as CESA, California State Summer School for the Arts. And it was the first time that I had ever been actually around a group of kids that were as weird as I was, And so it was really just crazy to just spend a month in my summer all the way in Southern California away from my family, you know, in this little pocket, of artists. And when I got home, it was like, what am I doing here? And I just needed a community like that. And I had heard the words like poetry slam and teen poetry thrown around, and I literally Googled those terms, and Youth Speaks kept coming up. And I entered the slams. I won, went on to Brave New Voices, and I couldn't get enough after that. I was one of the first ones, I think, to turn in the spokes application for last year. I was that excited. I was like, I got to get on. And that's that. I've been here ever since.
So I was introduced to Youth Speaks, I believe, in 2001. So it's been a long time now, actually. I was in the eighth grade. I'm now a senior, and... Youth Speaks came to my middle school and did a big performance. Paul Flores was one of, and Paul and Jason were two of the three people performing when Youth Speaks came to my school. And my friend was the president of the school, and she had gotten Youth Speaks. She had, because generally Youth Speaks works within the high schools, and my friend Dahlia had called up Youth Speaks and gotten them to come and do a performance at our school, which was a middle school. And she got a whole bunch of teachers to bring their kids. And I was sitting in the back, and I had never seen anything like spoken word remotely like it, and I was just blown away. It was like my first concert, basically. Like, it was crazy, and I just went wild. And at the end, they said, come up to the stage if you want flyers, if you want to hear about this workshop that we're going to offer at your school once a week. And so I was like, oh, I have to do it. And so I got a couple of my friends to do it with me. And so basically Youth Speaks offered this free workshop, and once a week we'd leave our English class and go to an empty classroom, and a Youth Speaks mentor would just tell us to write out our lives, basically, and to study it and to edit it and bring back something you were proud of, and whatever you brought back would be poetry. And it was pretty incredible. And so I fell in love with it. And so when I went to high school next year as a freshman, I looked at the Youth Speaks website, and they offer free after-school writing workshops. So I started going after school, and then I started performing a little bit and meeting the older kids and wanting to be part of the community.
So what I'm hearing is that it was what James started was a community project in literature, more or less. You wanted to find other writers, and two people who you found after a certain amount of years was Melanie and Emiliano. I want to just go back. What were your expectations, James, when you first started visiting? What were you expecting to get? I mean, did you even expect kids to come to your after-school workshops the first time you went out?
So I had a theory. So in graduate school, which I constantly knock, so please forgive me, but in graduate school, everybody kept talking about how political the act of writing was, that only the privileged were allowed to write. And I never bought that for a second. I thought only the privileged were getting published, not only the privilege of being heard, but I was confident that people were writing all over the place. Always had been and always would be. So sort of optimistically, I was like, look, we're just going to go out there and tell young people we're going to offer workshops, and we're going to get some young people to show up, and we're going to have this great program, and we're going to rival the college programs, et cetera, et cetera. Even tried to do it on the campus of San Francisco State, actually, but they decided they didn't want to have it happen there. So that was my expectation, but, you know, quickly when I went to the schools, we started going to the schools to recruit for the after-school workshops, and we would go to English classes and in different San Francisco public high schools. Poetry was a dirty word. There were a few people writing it, but it was a very dirty word. It was something that was teachers hated teaching, and young people were completely bored by, which made sense. So, you know, the expectations didn't necessarily match up with the initial involvement, but a couple things happened. One was people like Jason, who was one of the first young people who got involved, and they became sort of the trendsetters for other youth because youth saw other youth writing and speaking. Jason did that poem that he read earlier in 1997, and here was a young person, and Jason looked very different at the time. He had long braids, and he was dressed super hip-hop. And he was speaking loudly and aggressively, intelligently and creatively, about issues that were directly affecting him, and a lot of his peers responded. So that was one thing that happened, peers responding to their peers. The other thing that happened was that we took advantage of the dot-com world here. Computers were turning over very quickly, and I got about 50 donated computers and told kids if they came to 40 hours of after-school workshops, they'd get a computer to write at home with. So we got the first 50 kids, like, really easy after that. And then once those young people were engaged, more and more young people got engaged. But it's been a shift because, you know, really it was 100 kids. How many of you write poetry? It was maybe 2 would raise their hand sheepishly. And now we go to the schools. How many of you write poetry? It's half the group. Hey! And they're very enthusiastic about it. And that's just been in 10 years. So
you said poetry was a dirty word back then. I want to ask a question one more time to the youth. How does performing spoken word allow you guys, you two, to call yourselves poets?
I wouldn't say that it allows me to call myself a poet. I would say that it allows other people to know that I'm a poet. But even if I never said another word on a microphone, I would still be a poet. It's just words, however I chose to shape them, have always been the only thing that I had. And so it took a really long, like, I was writing for a really long time before I ever even heard of Youth Speaks, because that's the only thing that I had to listen, so to speak. And so when I actually got the nerve to perform and then realized that I was pretty okay at it, it was exciting that other people could now know that I was a poet and could feed off of that, and we could enter dialogue about that. So I think it just allows everybody else to know, because, you know, I know regardless of whether I speak.
I also think that spoken word, I mean, redefined poetry for me when I first saw it. I didn't imagine that poetry could go in that direction at all. So I hadn't written a poem before I was introduced to Speak since, like, the 5th grade, right? When this old lady would come into our classes and give us poetry lessons once a week. And so it redefined poetry in the sense that, like, it was something cool to do, and that it was something powerful that your peers would respond to. And I started considering myself a poet, not after I started performing, but after I started going to the workshops. Because, and just as Melanie said, like, if I never perform again, I'd still consider myself a poet because, spoken word is about the writing, yes, and it's also very much about the performing. That's super important to the culture. And combining both of those things gives you a very powerful relationship with your words and with writing. And so by performing a lot, my relationship became a lot more meaningful with my writing. And so I could never, like, not consider myself a poet now.
Paul, Melani said something really interesting. She said, and I paraphrase, however I use the words, it's poetry. I think when many of us were younger and we were getting taught what poetry was, we were not allowed to think that way. And I think that's been really important. And I think that's part of what Youth Speaks' mission is, certainly. is to help redefine poetry, as Emiliano just said. But I think when we were growing up, poetry was very much about form, where it was, you know, this is a haiku, and this is a sonnet, and this is this, and this and that. And if you're lucky enough for the muse to come in and whisper on your shoulder at any given time, and you do something that kind of looks like that, you're a poet. I mean, I was a 16-year-old kid in New York, and I remember writing a poem where I used the word thee. And I'm still like, it's like, thee? What was I thinking? Like, but that's because I had no sense of what poetry really could be. And I think part of what we really try and do is say the form is the shell. The poetry is the stuff you stuff in there. And that's that can only come from you.
So YouSpeaks, as part of its mission, wants to include young writers in the literary continuum. We have invited both Elaine and Jaime to represent the literary establishment, if you will, even as far as that can, as far alternative, as far to the left as that can be. But they certainly both work in publishing. They have published books, have distribution, what you would call literary artists and professionals. Elaine and Jaime, what about spoken word challenges literary traditions? Or what about spoken word? How does spoken word fit into literary tradition, according to your experience or knowledge?
Can you go first?
Okay, I'll go first. Before I answer that question, though, I want to just recall for myself how I met James and perhaps understand why I'm here tonight. James came, I was teaching a contemporary world poetry class for the creative writing department at SF State about 10 years ago, and I was one of these 11th hour hires. So I had to come up with a curriculum, choose my books, and I was sweating bullets. I mean, what am I going to do in this class? And I think James came into my office and said, I want to be your TA. I have all these cool books we can read, but I also have this program that I think you'll be interested in. Now, while I was doing that class, I also was doing my work in the College of Education, where I worked primarily with first-generation college students. So there was this, there were these two student populations I was working with, and so James, I think alluded to the type of, perhaps the type of work, the type of students that were in the creative writing program. That student population on one hand, and on the other, I had this younger group that really was, they were first generation college students. They would be the first members of their family to come to college, and they had this energy that I think I see in a lot of the youth poets. So that's the beginning. Where does spoken word fit in terms of the spectrum of poetry? Again, I have to sort of personalize it. I came up in the creative writing workshop. I was an undergraduate at UC Santa Cruz, where I studied with George Hitchcock. And I remember going to poetry readings, the ones that were supposed to be the really cool ones. I saw Robert Creeley, you know, and sort of read and tried to imitate how he read all the time. You know? Yeah. The sagging eye. And then there were the poetry readings were for me very one-sided. It was the reader and the audience, and it was the audience much like yourselves, just sort of listening. That sort of vision of the poetry reading changed when I first went to my first YouSpeaks event, and it was at the ODC Gallery, was it? Yeah, about 8 years ago. And like Emiliano had mentioned, for him, it was. I had never seen anything like it. The energy that was in that room, and the youth poets memorizing their pieces, committing them to memory, and performing them. So it wasn't just the poem on the page; it was the performance, and the performances. Was pretty amazing, enthralling in some ways. I remember, I don't know if it was it Cassie or even Tim Arevalo, one of the two finalists. It's to watch them perform. I'll try to describe. Tim Arevalo's piece, he had taken off his shirt, so he was naked from the waist up, and he had the F-bomb written across his chest, right? And he performed this incredible piece about his identity as a queer Filipino young man, and the perceptions, the challenges that he had to deal with. And then after it, as he was performing and after he performed, that just the level of energy that you could feel, it was very tangible. And then I thought, thinking now as I describe this, there's that García Lorca talks about, that this concept of the duende, right? This sort of creative energy that comes. He used it to describe the flamenco dancers as they performed, and it's that creative energy that comes from the earth through the soles of your feet and sort of takes over. And that's what I saw in those performances, and it is performance to a great extent. For me, slam poetry, it is about performing your work. That's not to say that the young poets, toiled and spent time on the page, with the page, but I think that to be on the stage, to perform it, to commit it to memory, is elemental in spoken word poetry.
Thank you. Elaine, what has been your experience with spoken word and Youth Speaks in relationship to the work that you do as an editor for City Lights?
The relationship between Youth Speaks and my work as an editor at City Lights is... it's interesting. There's some intersection, and then there's large swaths of it that don't intersect at all. And I guess I'd like to start answering your previous question more, though. That's more interesting to me, is the idea of how does this somehow challenge the literary establishment or the genre of poetry? What mark does that leave, or what does it do? And I guess, it's interesting. Part of what I wonder about, and some of this just comes with the continuous entry of young people into a genre, so that it's always something that, when kids are 9, 10, 11 years old, or some of these middle school kids that you're reaching out to or whatever, you don't expect these people to have a sense of history or where they fit in a literary tradition, what might have come before them that actually is influencing what they're doing now. And I think that's fine, that's completely excusable. I do think, though, that at some point, the teenagers who pursue this, and I think that Youth Speaks tries to do this, need to become aware that actually they are part of a long tradition, and spoken word poetry did not initiate with hip-hop. There is a long tradition of spoken word poetry, and there are people who have performed poetry forever. So it's not always been this, like, powdery old lady, in the classroom thing. Unfortunately, though, I do think that that's a lot of what kids in general, you know, until Youth Speaks came along, have been exposed to as poetry as a form. So it's presented as this kind of, you know, rarefied art form that's for nerds or smart people or sort of impenetrable. And even when they make it kind of interesting to you, it's not quite given to you as a tool for you to use and speak in your own voice. So like James saying that, you know, you might even use the word thee or something silly, you know. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, I'll never forget, you know, years ago, saying to Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who's the founder of City Lights, who's a poet, and, you know, I said, Lawrence, you know, what's spoken word poetry? And he's like, well, you know, all poetry is spoken word poetry. I mean, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, yeah, that's sort of what I thought. And he's like, well, you know, I mean, some poetry, and obviously some poetry is written to be performed. That's different, you know. But all poetry is written with an ear for language. And you're definitely hearing it in your head and speaking it in your mind, at least, if not aloud, when you're writing, because poetry is always about cadence. And so, there have always been traditions of poets who wrote to perform. I mean, I just published a book by Kamau Daoud, who is an amazing spoken word poet. Now, Kamau is probably 55 years old. He comes from the Black Arts Movement. You know, he performs with musicians, and it's all about performing. I mean, we were at a festival recently where he performed, and, you know, it's kind of like some poets get up there and it's like they're reading a recipe or something, you know. It's just weird. It's like some poets are not about performing. But there is some, you know, there have always been poets and movements that have been about performance. Now, it might not involve memorization, but it does involve performance skills. And, you know, the beat poets were all about performing poetry, too. I mean, that's really, you know, I mean, they talk about that, bringing poetry off the page and into, you know, into some sort of vibrant kind of interactive sort of performance. And I think, you know, beyond that, you can go back through history and the griots and, you know, there's always been a tradition of people who use this form. So I guess I would say that if we're talking about how spoken word is going to fit in and influence the genre, I would say, well, it's part of that stream. And it, you know, I think that maybe because this kind of pop culture phenomenon that you're talking about makes it somehow more influential because we live in a pop culture. But I don't know if that really has anything to do with what its actual mark is on poetry or on literature. I think that has to do with what its mark is on the minds of young people who think of it as a consumer product or a star system or something. But I'm not saying that all of the people involved in the genre are thinking of it that way, but I'm saying that, you know, I think it's a conflation of those two things when you're talking about it. And I think that it challenges poetry in a way that, because usually, pretty much, the content of spoken word poetry is going to be very immediate. It's about issues of identity and storytelling about who a person is and what they're experiencing in the world, and it's politically engaged. And so I do think that there is sort of a push towards that, and I think that that's a good push. Not that I think that all poetry should be that, but sometimes there's a lack of that and there's kind of a contemplation and a kind of a more removed sense that poets think they're supposed to have. You're not actually supposed to be inside of the poem that much. This kind of goes to the opposite extreme. So I think there's a tension there. I think also there's a tension between, you know, whether or not poetry that's written to be performed actually stands up to be read. So as a publisher, you know, that's why I started out by saying, in terms of what are the intersections of my life there, that creates problems, you know, in terms of creating a book and having it be a lasting thing of value that you feel like actually translates without the poet there to speak for it. So, you know, it's not that those two things don't come together, but sometimes it is problematic. And so, you know, that's why I would say that those two worlds are not necessarily the same. They overlap in places.
I mean, if I could respond, I think that that's really interesting what you just said, because I personally hate boring poetry readings and always have. And it's rare that a spoken word poetry reading is boring, but a lot of spoken word books or books by spoken word artists are boring. They're not really interesting poetry. It's one of the things that we've been working on, actually, because I think what we try and do at YouSpeaks is we do, although we really champion spoken word and we do a poetry slam, we do separate, at least attempt to separate ourselves from some of the larger movements where I think people are doing it for sort of more commercial potential purposes, and we really focus a little bit more on sort of the individual and educational development. But we're really trying to get to create books that don't do that, that don't just translate the performed poem to the page, because it is a different intention. I think when you're writing to perform, that's a specific intention. If you're writing to publish, that's a different intention. Sometimes a book, a poem written for the page can be performed beautifully, and sometimes a really great performed poem can look good on the page, but that's certainly not always the case, and it's not a standard that we want to set up, I think. I mean, one of the things, I mean, I love City Lights, obviously, and they're the clear world champions of poetry, but they were the first quote-unquote literati or anything associated with that to really embrace YouSpeaks for a number of reasons. I think part of it is the people who are there, and they're just, in my opinion, believers in language and in the potential of language, but I do think that there is a direct link to the Beats and to what these young folks do. Clearly the Black Arts Movement as well. But I think specifically in San Francisco, the tradition of the Beats, which still is very much alive and still carries the poetic merit of the Bay Area, is embraced. I think what the Beats talked about, in relatively small numbers of people, but about the democratization of the art form and that anybody can be a poet and that it can be about everyday things and that language can be everyday language, is embodied in these young people, for better or worse. And I do think there's that connection. And I know all the times that we've done any performances with Lawrence Ferlinghetti or Jack Hirschman or any of these folks, it's been such a tremendous experience to sort of watch that direct exchange. I love that.
You know, while you're talking, I mean, this is just an aside, but it's also interesting that, you know, the Beats were completely influenced by jazz music and improvisation on that level. And, you know, you have spoken word and it's coming out of hip-hop. And that kind of performative musicality that influenced both of those traditions, and where that audience kind of interaction between what's happening on stage and what's happening to the people in the audience and the ability to break that barrier, I mean, those are definite parallels. So
I want to go back to Melani and Emiliano. This year, the YouSpeaks Teen Poetry Slam is going to be at the San Francisco Opera House. Which is really an unlikely place for a teen poetry slam to happen. I don't think this ever had a hip-hop DJ inside the Opera House. There's also 3,200 seats in there. Emiliano and Melani, does winning the YouSpeaks Poetry Slam give you celebrity status among other teenagers? And is there pressure to win the slam? And what's in it for youth who are not Poetry Slam winners?
Okay, so first of all, for just to explain what a slam is really briefly, a poetry slam is a big celebration at YouSpeaks, and it's a poetry competition where there are judges generally selected from the crowd and where poets compete in rounds. And so scores are put on poems. And the slam, YouSpeaks does a slam every year, and it's where we get a ton of people to come out, because people get really excited about competition in general, always. But it's not the only thing that YouSpeaks does. And we have giant performances, not as big as the Opera House, but we do have giant performances throughout the year that aren't competitions, that aren't slams. So the slam obviously is super big, but I don't think there is pressure from YouSpeaks as an organization to win the slam. I think there is a lot of pressure, and it's a good type of pressure, to compete, though. And it's the difference between winning and competing. And hopefully you compete and it inspires you to delve further into the organization. I mean, the slam is by far the most accessible thing to people who have never seen poetry, because the crowd gets really hyped, there's a DJ playing great music, and people are giving the performances their all because they want to win. And so that's how you can enter. And I know I didn't win the first slam I competed in, and made me want to do it the next year around even more, though. So, and just like any other performance, I mean, people have recognized me randomly on the street from You Speaks things. I don't know if it was the slams necessarily, because I have performed at other things, though. So, yeah.
I think that yes, there's a little bit of a celebrity status. I had someone for the first time that I can remember today, tell me, you know, I've never heard you perform, but I heard you, you know, you bring it. And it was like, but you've never heard me perform. So the fact that I'm coming up in conversation somehow as someone who knows how to bring it speaks a little bit to that celebrity status. I agree with Emiliano. I think that there is pressure to compete and to get your voice out there, but I don't feel any pressure to win. I don't feel like if I compete this year and I don't win, my spokes job will be taken away, or if I were to try to come back next year as an intern or something, it'd be no, sorry, you didn't win the slam. So it's not that kind of pressure at all, and I think that's really good. And about folks who don't win the slam, me and Emiliano were actually talking before how we hate to see kids who come, and if they don't make it to the second round, you know, they'll leave. And how we just, you know, we would wish that they would stay, you know, to continue, not only to continue supporting the other poets, but then also just to learn more about You Speaks and hopefully to be inspired or something. But to see them leave as if, that's all there is to it is really kind of a downer. And I think that, at least for me, what I found after the slam was over, after we came back, you know, in 2004, after we came back from L.A., and it was got off the bus and got into my mom's car and said bye to everybody, it was there was community after that. You know, I had, a whole nother family after that, you know, I've also really grown a lot in the past 2 years that I've been with You Speaks. And it's to the point even that my parents actually notice, not that they don't notice me, but it's to the point where they were noticing that there were things that I was crediting You Speaks for changing in me that they claimed they had been trying to change in me forever.
Can you give us an example?
My confidence. I have always been a really insecure child. I just have always, that's just always been me. I've always been someone who didn't just feel comfortable in my own skin, and now I walk into a room, and it's I'm still humble, because You Speaks, I don't think, is about arrogance, so I'm still very humble, but at the same time, I don't feel as though everyone else in a room is better than I am. I finally, you know, I'm on the same page as everybody in the room, and that's something that, you know, my mom says she's always been trying. I always tell you that you're great, and it's but you can't tell me I'm great. They could tell me I'm great. So you know, just I think that for kids who don't win the poetry slam, there's just a whole nother world. That's the face almost, and there's something that's just deeper than that. It's almost like when you go backstage at a production. There's a whole nother world backstage at a production besides what's actually going on in front of the audience, and I feel like that. That there's backstage, you know, if you don't win the competition.
Can I say that I hate to hear you guys refer to it as competing. It's really interesting that you both refer to it as that we're encouraging you to compete. And I guess I know that's what it is, although we try and really discourage.
There's judges and stuff.
Yeah, it's a mock competition, but but it's interesting, because then I think back to when I was young, who were the mentors I had as writers, and they had basically told me to do the same thing, but the form wasn't available. But it was send your stuff out. Get this book, and you find out what journal to send your stuff to, and send it out. And it was just a different kind of competition and a lot less immediate. But, I mean, I guess that is a good thing, right? We're actually encouraging you to get your voice out there in a public forum as accessible as possible, I guess.
Well, yeah. One thing that's... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty powerful thing just to be told to compete, you know? The first time James told me to compete, I was surprised that anyone would think I should participate. But no, because I think the kids definitely do realize going into the slam that the slam is a competition. And so to be supported by the staff and by the other poets, I mean, if I find out that my friend's competing also, I'll be like, oh, that's so tight. And it's you know, it is a community. And during the performance, you do forget it's a competition because everybody's sharing things that are so personal. And so you do remember that everyone you're competing against is also sharing with you very personal things, and you're doing the same with them. So you award each other a lot of respect, and you also just feel on top of the world just because you signed up on a list, and like you're a competitor, and like, and does it, I mean, for me, it's never really mattered whether one wins or not.
Mm-hmm. I have one short question for everybody to answer, and then we got to go on to our quick Q&A with the audience. Please just take a turn, everyone, and give me one aspect that you hope, or one thing that you hope You Speaks will leave behind for the Bay Area, for literature, for poetry. What do you hope the legacy of You Speaks will be 10, 15 years from now? What do you hope, or what do you think You Speaks will have left behind? Anybody can start. How about with Jaime?
The You Speaks poets, there's an age requirement, is there not?
Mm-hmm.
So which is
13 to 19.
I think what I see as one of the legacies that You Speaks can leave is this sense of opening the door to a life into the world of poetry, literature. The Poetry Slam is not the culmination, I don't think. I hope it's not. And for these young, emerging performers and writers, I think it's, it is that gate that's opening up to other literatures that go beyond spoken word.
So I have physics this year as a senior, and I think it might be the third law or something, Newton's third law or whatever, but an object in motion tends to stay in motion. And I see You Speaks as something that is in motion, and it will stay in motion. 10, 15 years from now, my role will be really different in You Speaks. I'm still going to be around 10 to 15 years from now. And my role will be really different, but there will always be someone else. Even now, I'm seeing, like, having been a part of the organization only 2 years, there's, you know, like, newer kids on spokes this year. There's newer, like, the slam this year is crazy. There's so many new faces and people who I see, kids who compete, and maybe they don't go on, but they have a spokes application in their hand, or they have a flyer for open mics in their hand or workshops in their hand. So they're still coming, and they will always be coming, because to me, there will always be people who need a space to go and just sit, kick it, be with people who think like them, you know, are like them in a way that they can't, you know, at You Speaks, you're just allowed to be yourself in a way that you can't be anywhere else, you know, and so there will always be somebody who needs that. I don't see it coming a time when that the need will be eliminated, and so objects in motion stay in motion.
Really?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming that You Speaks is still going to be doing what it's doing in 10 years and 15 years and 20 years, and I certainly hope that's true, because I think it's a huge, huge, huge benefit. You know, I think it's multifaceted. I mean, I would say, like, I mean, one of the things hearing the kids talk about the experience of being in the slam, and, you know, it's something I certainly notice and I think is one of the most beautiful things about it, is what they're doing is forming community. And the community is based on not just articulating their experience to each other. I mean, that's part of it, and sharing experience and kind of affirming. But a lot of it is about understanding what it means to wield language and to really be empowered by that, and to know that you have that under your belt and you can walk out in the world and use that anywhere you go, in any way you in any situation you find yourself, not necessarily just when you're doing slam poetry. So it's like Melanie was saying, you know, she walks into a room now, she has a sense of who she is that's different. And I see one of the, if you want to talk about legacy, You know, that's a legacy of a whole swath of young people that are being empowered in these ways to move into their life in whatever they do. I agree with Jaime. I also think that there's a certain sector of those kids who are having their minds open to being, you know, creative people for the rest of their lives. They will always do something like that. But even if some of them don't ever write a line of poetry again, they're still going to have found a voice and a confidence and an ability to perceive and deliver language in a way that will only make them, you know, citizens in some kind of more active way. And I think that that is a huge, huge addition to the general, you know, world that we live in here. So I think it's wonderful.
Definitely. So where I see you speaks in 10 to 15 years, just like a short little story, like I see basically Brave New Voices, which is the National Youth Poetry Slam, and that's something that Youth Speak started and hooked up with committed adult poets around the country and other small organizations doing similar things and created a national gathering of youth poets to see each other, and it grows every year. And I just remember seeing the first night last year, we were here downtown at the Yerba Buena Center in front, and so it's like 1,500 kids or whatever from all across the country, and like, and we're all waiting to get into the auditorium for the first performance that night, and they've all just got off planes, and like 7 ciphers started. Like, just people just wanted to just, they were just high off the energy, and it was incredible, and I just, it's one of those moments where you realize, like, it's not about the Bay Area at all, even though it was inspired. It was for youth of the Bay Area. It's a national thing, definitely, now. And that's really great to see. Another time I went with Paul Flores. He took me out. He said, "Do you want to go to Miami?" And I was, like, surprised, like, "What do you mean?" Like, and we went down to Miami with another youth poet. And we were working with young kids in Little Havana, Miami, Spanish, mainly, primarily Spanish-speaking kids. And we threw a poetry performance for them in a local park, and we did workshops in an after-school program, and it's like, that's the future of Youth Speaks. It's other people all around the country who want to do things like the things that Youth Speaks does for youth.
Hold on, I'm gonna ask you to hold, Mr. Founder. Hold on, hold your thought. Before you say that, I want to go to have Melani do a poem, because I want you to kind of, before you do the legacy, I want you to listen to these poets first so we can get a little bit more perspective. So please give a round of applause to Melani Clay, who's going to do a poem for us.
Ooh, surprise performance. This piece is called Lost. I'll be performing it, participating with this poem this Friday. Participating, a participant. This Friday at the ODC, so this is one of my pieces. I never meant to hurt you, but the scriptures that were etched into my spirit at 6 years old are beginning to fester and itch. And yes, I am scratching, like you are the scar on my right foot. See, I thought if I pedaled fast enough, my pink bike would ascend and I would finally taste the clouds I skipped under. The bone-white flesh beneath my caramel skin peeked through briefly before blood pushed through the pores, forming a small river that wrapped around my heel and stained my flip-flop. I screamed and cried as my mother cleaned the wound, chiding me for riding a bike without proper shoes, speaking low to hide the quiver in her voice. And to this day, I still scratch this scar absent-mindedly. But you see, God, the difference between the scars I forced upon myself in childhood, tomboy, abandoned, and the scars that were forced upon me beneath my skin, beneath flesh and bone, past even the atoms dancing wildly to keep me tangible. The difference, God, is that I can see these scars. And if there's some itch in the night, I can scratch and be done. But with you, God, every time I go to sleep with an itch, I wake up with nightmares. I wake up with my lips burning 10 degrees hotter for every time I've said I don't know when asked if I believe in you. I wake up parroting scriptures I've never understood. I'm this half-human, half-televangelist who either way doesn't know the names of the deities my spirit daily reaches out to. I wake up only to find my answers are still asleep. What do I do? if I don't want your embrace? What if maybe, just maybe, I trust me to keep my soul safe? Yes, fallible, insecure, jealous, lustful, sinful, evil, dirty me. If I can't trust that the person who gazes back at me every morning is enough, then why should I ever trust you? I have wounds gaping wide, my blood forming rivers that stain conversation, but there is no one to heal me this time. My mother leaves the dinner table every time your name is brought up outside of saying grace. I thought if I prayed hard enough, my spirit would ascend to taste the God I mourn under. Instead, I've fallen flat, a traitor maybe, or just someone lost. Thank you.
Thank you, Melani. I'd like to hear from Emiliano now, please.
This is kind of an old poem, not as old as Jason's, though. He's old. All right. This morning, my head was foggy, and I was seeing things. I saw someone who never got on the bus. The handicap bus drives up to each kid's house personally, but this young boy with brown eyes and brown hair does not get picked up by our bus. He never was before, and sometimes new kids are added to our route, but I know he wasn't because he doesn't qualify. The ghost sitting next to me is not retarded or crippled, mentally disabled or physically handicapped. He shouldn't be on this bus, but he is here, and it's because of me. I have cerebral palsy, and I was born with it. And at school, I am aware of it, but on this bus, I am not handicapped. I do not drool, scream, breathe too hard, or shake. I have brown eyes and I have brown hair. I am an evil boy who wishes I wasn't disabled, and even after I conquered my fear of being seen walking off the retard bus, when I got to school, I still can't relate to these other four kids who take my bus, who are also born disabled. Their eyes don't take in pain like mine. They rarely look directly at you, pupils glazed over with a lazy type of enlightenment. They seem numb to the world. Maybe tomorrow, the sky won't be so gray with clouds, and my head won't be so foggy. My ghost won't travel next to me, and the only eyes to see will be these strangers' company. Jules, Anthony, Rakisha, and I won't take their humanity out of them. I won't judge them, try to hope that for my own conscience we are similar. Jules, happy to hear a new story about the bus driver's dog and quite upset that she is 5 minutes late. Rakisha, frustrated that Jules takes too long getting on the bus. Anthony, wearing a Giants jersey and an Oakland A's cap, excitedly counting off the dates of the next 7 games for each baseball team. And the new kid, whose name I can't remember, is jumping out of his restrainer, grinding his teeth and whinnying, forcing his breaths in and out hard enough to play a trumpet. He is a knot of tangled muscles stretched over bones. The foggy morning before, this boy had made me want to scream, admit that I couldn't take it anymore, that the handicap bus should stop pulling up to my house every morning, because if I can't accept my oneness with the rest of the disabled community, then I should be excluded from its privileges. On this sunny morning, I did not see some lazy, faded look in this boy's eyes. In the middle of his black, bruised socket, under the glaze, I saw emotion. Something each from Jules, Anthony, Rakisha, discontent, excitement, frustration, happiness. Sitting there, eyes were looking back at me, and whether they were my reflection in the window or his, this boy looked at me with brown eyes and brown hair.
Thank you, Emiliano. Beautiful. So, James, what is your hope for the legacy of You Speaks 10 to 15 years from now?
So I'm wearing a T-shirt from last summer, actually, and it was a City Lights 50th anniversary celebration. And I had the honor to MC their big block party. And it's something I'll never forget, because I had the distinct feeling there amongst all these greats that I can do what I do, and these guys can do what they do and just did because of what those folks did. I mean, the simple fact Ferlinghetti going to court to be able to publish Howl allows us to say on stage what we say. So my hope is that the work we're doing now allows tens of thousands of young people to say things that we can't even imagine yet in ways that we can't even imagine yet. My greatest hope is that we change the perception of young people, both how they perceive themselves and how adults perceive them and how they perceive each other, because I think then we won't tolerate a lot of what we tolerate young people to accept. It's interesting because we're really now as an organization, now we're in our 10th year, trying to figure out what to do. We have this amazing grassroots network, this cultural power that's just brimming with potential, and we want to figure out what to do with it, how to really engage it in the political world, how to really engage it in the educational world, how to really just engage it in the world at large so that we can no longer tolerate the things that are intolerable. And there's a lot of intolerable out there right now in this city, in this country, and in this world. I look back at the Harlem Renaissance, and I like to think big, right? You can say what the legacy is, fine. The Harlem Renaissance, to me, is really interesting because we think about it in terms of the painters and the poets and the dancers and the musicians. But the Harlem Renaissance also bred an entire generation of politicians, of teachers, of parents, of garbage men, of all different kinds of people, all of whom were infused with a different sense of identity and potential. And that's what I think the greatest legacy of You Speaks is. If it can continue to inspire generations to look at themselves and their potential differently, that will be a wonderful thing.
Thank you, James. Thank you very much. We have time for a couple questions. Please come up to the microphone and ask your question. We'll take a couple here. One here.
How you doing, Melani? I want to know what your perception of what Elaine was talking about your generation, whether or not they know the history and how your art form evolved from a while back.
She has a pretty accurate perception there. I honestly don't know a lot about the history, especially the history of City Lights. I honestly feel like I had a slow start. You know, I didn't grow up in Berkeley or anything like that. Like, I didn't have parents who were uber everything and could tell me about all the things that ever existed in the world. I've always had to kind of, and don't even get me started about things being taught in school. So I've always had to kind of look for things for myself, and it's really difficult to know even where to start. So I'm getting started, and I'm off to a slow start. I think it's true that a lot of us probably, I mean, I can only speak for myself in terms of what we know. I don't know a lot, but I don't think that speaks to a disregard for what happened before. Not saying that that's what you were saying, but I don't think it speaks to a disregard for our history. I think it's perfectly fine for that to come after, and you'll still be all right. I just think the resources for knowing that type of information are not always right at our fingertips.
Thank you. Next question.
Yeah, hi. I thank you so much. So how do you get the money?
Could you be a little clearer? Money for what?
Yeah, the money to go on and on and on. Yeah.
But that's a great question because it's not out there. To be very frank, we've actually had tremendous growth, but we're still way underfunded. And we are the only spoken word or youth poetry program in the country that has a budget over $1 million, and it's taken us 10 years to get there, and we have 16 employees. It's amazing, actually, because I'm going to be a hater for a second, but you know the Poetry Foundation, Poetry Magazine, which is a great magazine, got bequeathed $100 million and started a foundation. And with that $100 million, so far, they've done very little. And I think, in fact, on the phone to me, because I, of course, hit them up for some money, they said, you know, we don't really think any more poetry needs to get written. So they actually started a national recitation contest based totally on our Brave New Voices model, which has young people memorizing the canon. Now, I love canonical work, and I think part of what we try and do is break open the canon and get these young people firmly into it. But that was a very strange thing. And so it's the folks who have the money aren't spending it the way it should. I mean, to be frank, if we were training teenagers not to be educators or leaders or artists, but we're training them to sort of build high-grade weapon system, we would have billions of dollars. So it's very hard. I mean, we're fortunate. We're funded by foundations. We have a growing pool of individuals, and we are on the hustle all the time. Part of our hip-hop aesthetic, and certainly our organization, it does have the hip-hop aesthetic, is we turn every dollar into five, and we spend it 25 times. But it's really hard. I think that we have, in addition to all the other things we pledge, we also pledge to never let the work stop, and also to make sure that our people are paid pretty well. Paul Flores, Jason Mateo, Mark Bamuthi Joseph, a number of people have been with the organization for a long time, and that's very rare in the nonprofit world. Because one of the things that really kills nonprofits is the heavy turnover of staff, where folks are way underpaid, and so you hire someone who's 22, and just when they're trained to be effective employees, they go on to a better-paying job. We don't want to let that happen because we feel the work is too important. So if you're listening out there, radio audience, you can send us a check. That's always good. I mean, but basically, we're paid by people who believe in what we're trying to do. We don't want to change our mission to change to get the dollars, so we hope we pursue the dollars very hard to support what it is we do.
And you can go get more information at youthspeaks.org. We also have tickets for sale to the March 18th final at Opera House. She's got those. We have time for two more questions. Yes.
Okay, 10 years. You've got to be so stoked. Congratulations. And thank you for the work that you do for bringing together this community of young artists, for helping them find their voice, and more importantly, for helping them, providing them a forum to share that voice. And kind of selfishly, thanks for inviting me, too, because it's great fun to watch. To the artists, thank you so much for sharing your work and your passion and your energy. And I'm looking forward to seeing you at the contest. I do have a question. Actually, two-part question. So what's the biggest challenge? I mean, aside from funding, which kind of always seems to be a problem with organizations like this that are doing amazing work, aside from money, what are the big challenges that you're facing, and also what's next for YouSpeaks?
I mean, you guys, I think, should answer part of the challenge. I think that from my perception, one of the greatest challenges is hip-hop, is mainstream culture. I think the stuff that young people are fed constantly. As Melani was saying, part of the reason I think why the maybe history of what should be learned isn't there, poetry and otherwise, is because of all the stuff that's fed. So I would be interested to hear that. What's next for us, I think, is Emiliano referenced it. I think we're really trying to push this national network so that there are more and more young people involved and that there are more opportunities for educators and youth to find ways in and then to create their own ways out. I think we're confident that what's next for YouSpeaks is that these guys are going to run the organization.
Let me be the program director real quick. What's next for us is buying our own theater.
Yes.
We're trying to get our own theater so that we can produce our own theater works and not have to rent anymore. That's really what we're trying to do. We like to commission and produce our own theater. We're going to be publishing 6 new books on First Word Press, our own publication imprint, which will hopefully one day be distributed by City Lights. So, yeah, those are a couple things.
At the City Lights annex in our new theater.
Okay, yeah. To tie into what James was talking about, as a challenge, mainstream culture, I think very specifically just for, like, the space that YouSpeaks works in, each individual staff member, us as poets, the biggest challenge is YouSpeaks growing, because we all want YouSpeaks to grow, and we all want to see YouSpeaks grow as quickly as possible. And we also not want to be swept up by mainstream culture in that process, because as we grow, we tap more and more into mainstream culture. And the reason that YouSpeaks works is because it's not a single club in a single public school in San Francisco. It taps into tons, 20, 30, however many schools all across the Bay Area, and it works outside of the schools. And everything we offer, workshops, performances, competitions, is also a recruitment device. So it works because it's a community of diverse young people coming from the most random backgrounds. So the biggest challenge is like growing and maintaining this very tightly knit community and understanding our place in the mainstream. Like, it's crazy to see spoken word McDonald's commercials. I get really defensive. I'm like, shut up right now. Yeah. I get so mad when I hear that type of stuff. So to let Melani continue.
That's definitely what I was going to speak on too, is just, you know, when I'm listening to the radio and there's a Cavassier or Hennessy, you know, and the dude's like, you know, drink Hennessy because it's so, and you're like, no, like, even though that's the poetry voice that we make fun of, you still don't want to hear it. Like, that's our poetry voice to make fun of if you can't take it to sell your liquor. I think personally a big challenge for me right about now that I'm going through is I'm just in a big transition point in my life, period, just as a senior getting ready to go to college and everything like that. But then within the organization, because as I said, I plan to stay around, no one in this organization can get rid of me no matter how hard they try. So considering the fact that I will be around, just you know, redefining my, not that I can't ever perform again ever because I'll be over 19 or whatever, but just kind of also, you know, I want to be an educator. So starting, you know, I'm starting even now to get more into the arts and education aspect of Youth Speaks. And just that transition is, it's an exciting challenge. It's not a challenge where I'm just like, oh God, I have to, I can't be on Spokes anymore. But it is, it's just an exciting challenge for me to just, to start thinking about where do I go from here within the organization? And I think that relates to the organization growing as a whole, you know. So the personal growth within the organization is very similar to the growth as, of the organization as a whole, not wanting to lose what it is that kept it pure in the first place, but still wanting to get bigger and one day take James's job.
Melani got me thinking, too. I think the biggest challenge for Youth Speaks, also because it's growing and getting more youth who want to be super, super involved, is like to use them effectively as possible, because we do like start young, get old, leave, you know, and there is a pattern of rotating youth coming in and out of the organization. And so as Youth Speaks grows, Youth Speaks wants to give youth more responsibility within the organization, teaching workshops, facilitating discussions and going into schools and doing outreach in that sense. So and we want to be part of it as we get older. And another thing that Youth Speaks wants to do is be a model, right, for other people who want to do this across the country. And that's a challenge, because if you're thinking of yourself as a model, you really turn into a perfectionist, right? So, like, Youth Speaks wants to get it down to an art, and, like, the kids do too, you know? Like, we want to feel confident taking this to Miami or wherever and being like, this is how you can set up a youth board called Spokes, and this is how you can do this and that. So it's a challenge, too, to think that we want to, like, spread, because it's not just an idea. We also have to show people how to organize.
Excellent. I think we'll end with that. For the radio audience, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club's InForum program. Tonight, we're honoring the 10-year legacy of Youth Speaks, the national leader in creative writing and spoken word programs for teenagers. I'm Paul Flores, program director of Youth Speaks, and I'm here with Melani Clay, teen poetry slam champion, James Cass, founder and executive director of Youth Speaks, Emiliano Bouillois-Chacon, teen poetry slam champion, Elaine Katzenberger, associate director of City Lights Bookstore, Jaime Jacinto, poet, Jason Mateo, poet. Let's give a big hand to the panelists for their thoughts here tonight. Now, this meeting of InForum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned. Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of InForum, a division of the Commonwealth Club by and for people in their 20s and 30s, with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. I'm Paul Flores, Program Director of Youth Speaks. Spoken word